From KMXC in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. Coming up this week, halibut sizes appear to be shrinking, and the International Pacific Halibut Commission is considering a change to the minimum size limit for commercial fisheries. Also, we take a look at salmon numbers across the state. Then more coming up on this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K through 12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
The International Pacific Halibut Commission, which regulates halibut fisheries in U.S. and Canadian waters, is set to take a fresh look at the minimum size limit for commercial fisheries during its meeting cycle this winter. The current limit allows commercial fishermen to retain fish larger than 32 inches, but the size of mature halibut has been shrinking over the years, which has some wondering whether the limit should be reduced or removed altogether. KBBI's Aaron Bolton explains.
Since the 1990s, the size of mature halibut has been falling.
And now their average size at age for halibut is approximately what it was in the 1920s and 1930s.
Steve Keith is the Assistant Director of the International Halibut Commission, or IPHC, and he says this is not the first time the commission revisited the size limit, which was set at its current level in 1974. The IPHC analyzed the possibility of reducing or eliminating the size limit back in 2015, but ultimately decided against making any changes. The limit is supposed to be a safeguard for spawning fish. The idea is that if halibut are larger than 32 inches, they're likely to have spawned, keeping future fish stocks healthy.
Well, now the average size of the fish has gotten smaller, so the question is, well, could you reduce the size limit and still have the same protection of the spawning biomass, but get some more yield out of the fisheries?
The commission released a new paper on the topic in August. The analysis estimates that if the commission ditched the current size limit and fishing behaviors remain the same, the total catch across all districts would see a small 4% bump.
The amount of the retained catch doesn't change very much, but the makeup of the catch would change. About a quarter of it would be fish that are under 32 inches.
Keith says that any changes in fishing behavior really depends on what's happening in each district. The Gulf of Alaska has seen the largest reduction in the size of mature fish compared to other regions, which may make targeting smaller fish more advantageous. But fishermen in the western Aleutian Islands are continuing to pull in larger fish. So it may not be economical to target halibut under 32 inches in those districts. Homer-based commercial fisherman and president of the North Pacific Fisheries Association, Malcolm Milne, currently fishes in the Gulf and has fished the Aleutians in the past. Milne says despite catching smaller fish over the past two decades, he's been in favor of keeping the current size limit.
At the time, I came out with the idea that it wasn't a good idea and that we would save more by keeping those fish in the water and letting them grow.
Milne also says he's been landing more fish over the 32-inch threshold over the past few years. But he adds that size isn't the only consideration. There's plenty of concern over what processors would pay for smaller halibut.
The marketability of the small fish has always been a question, too. Would that mean there would be a decrease in the value of the fishery if they started harvesting the fish? But that's obviously a secondary concern to the overall health of the biomass and what we're removing from the water.
The new analysis also estimates the mortality of undersized fish that are tossed overboard. Mortality rates are measured in pounds, and it's estimated that about 1 million pounds of undersized fish die in the Gulf of Alaska and Aleutian districts. It's estimated another 5 million pounds survive after being caught.
Always a tricky one to decide what happens to a fish once you throw it overboard, but certainly the way we release them, I don't run a bunch of gear. They seem very lively when we release them, but I think maybe some bigger operations might be a little different. Yeah, it's a hard number to ever pin down.
Milne notes that he'll keep a close eye on the conversation as it progresses into the winter, but he says the idea is worth a fresh look. The commission is set to examine the new analysis at its interim meeting in November and could have a decision on whether to make changes at its annual meeting in January. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
The Anchorage landfill is now the owner of 158,000 pounds of highly contested Bristol-based salmon from the fishing vessel Accutan. Even after a disastrous season where the boat ended up disabled, the crew was hopeful the fish could be saved and they would get paid. Zoe Sobel of Alaska's Energy Desk has the story of how so many valuable salmon ended up going to waste.
The fishing vessel Accutan is a custom processor. This summer, it was supposed to process up to 100,000 pounds of salmon a day for Bristol Bay Seafoods LLC, a small group of fishermen. But nearly everything that could go wrong did. The vessel's owner went broke, the crew wasn't paid, and when 158,000 pounds of fish came off the boat in early September, a third-party testing group, NSF, declared it unfit for human or animal consumption. Captain Steve Leckleitner says the only test NSF ran on the fish was a sniff test, meaning the tester smelled the fish to determine it was bad.
I kind of chuckled a little bit, you know, but that's how they're certified.
Leckleitner says a representative from Bristol Bay Seafoods LLC selected the four 50-pound bags that NSF tested. That means less than 0.1% of all the fish was tested. Because the fish was so highly contested, Leckleitner says he suggested to the NSF tester that additional testing be done.
She told me that full testing could be done, but it had to be contracted. And Bristol Bay Seafoods didn't pay for that, and they didn't want a report released.
NSF declined to comment for this story, saying they wanted to keep the testing confidential. In a statement, a lawyer representing Bristol Bay Seafoods LLC said the company believes the fish was polluted sometime between mid-August and when the fish was removed from the processor in early September. The lawyer says when the fish was unloaded, 25,000 pounds were visibly saturated with fuel. Additionally, the lawyer says it's unclear whether the Accutan crew contaminated the fish on purpose or through negligence. Chief Engineer Decio Andrade says it wouldn't make sense for the crew to destroy the fish since their pay hinged on the fish going to market.
You know, to say that all the fish is condemned, all the fish has diesel in it, that's BS. There's no way the diesel ever touched the fish.
Both Andrade and Captain Leckleitner believe Bristol Bay Seafoods LLC wanted the fish to be found unsafe for consumption because it allows the company to collect on an insurance claim for the fish's full market value.
If the fish is condemned, then Bristol Bay Seafoods has an insurance claim. They would receive all of that. If it went that way, then the crew would not get paid.
Leckleitner says the Department of Labor had liens on the fish. If it had sold, he says Bristol Bay Seafoods LLC would not see any money. Instead, the funds would be used to pay the crew. The Department of Labor has declined to comment until the case is closed. In Alaska, the State Department of Environmental Conservation says it's not unprecedented to have this much fish go to waste. Since 2014, the department has ordered more than 100,000 pounds of fish destroyed at least two other times. In this case, Bristol Bay Seafoods LLC says the Anchorage landfill was the only available disposal option in the state. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Unalaska.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Most of the 2017 salmon fisheries have ended for the season. Pinks and kings have drawn extra speculation in some regions due to the poor 2016 pink runs and some less than stellar king returns. KMXT spoke with Alaska Department of Fish and Game Deputy Director of the Division of Commercial Fisheries, Forrest Bowers, about this season's statewide salmon numbers.
You know, as you're probably aware, this 2017 was a very good salmon season for the commercial salmon fishing industry in Alaska. The harvest was about 225 million fish that was worth close to $700 million, and that's a big increase from 2016. It's about a 67% increase in value from 2016. So that's a pretty tremendous improvement from the prior year. 2016 was a very poor year for pink salmon. We had the disaster declaration for a number of areas across the state, and so we did see a nice turnaround in pink salmon abundance from 2016. In 2017, we harvested about 142 million pink salmon. It was the best chum salmon harvest on record. We harvested around about 25.2 million fish. That's the best on record. And the price for chum salmon was quite good, 66 cents a pound. So that was another strong economic contributor for the salmon fishery. And it was another good year for sockeye salmon. It's the third year in a row that we've harvested over 50 million sockeye. The majority of those came out of Bristol Bay, almost 38 million out of Bristol Bay. So across the state, pretty encouraging salmon returns.
If we could touch on Kings for just a second, it seems like some areas are doing really well or did really well this season and some areas not so much. Could you talk a little bit about how Kings are doing?
You know, we've been in a period of low king salmon abundance that stretches back almost 10 years. Some areas of the state, king salmon returns have improved. In 2017, we had a good return of king salmon to the Yukon River, good returns, early and late run returns to the Kenai. But other areas continue to struggle. Southeast Alaska, we saw record low abundance of king salmon in Southeast Alaska this year. Chignik was poor. The Kuskokwim, you know, we had a number of restrictions in place there to conserve king salmon, restrictions on the subsistence fishery. We haven't seen the Kuskokwim improve the same way that the Yukon has in the last couple of years. The one bright spot was the Copper River, where we had a preseason forecast that was very low that resulted in some preseason closures to the in-river sport fishery. As we started to see relative abundance indices, commercial catch indicators, the run appeared to be stronger than forecast, and actually it looks like we came in, you know, well above our escapement goal there and provided some reasonable harvest opportunities. So that was one bright spot.
That was Forrest Bowers, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Deputy Director of the Division of Commercial Fisheries, talking about the season's statewide salmon numbers.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KBBI's Aaron Bolden in Homer and the Alaska Energy Desk's Zoe Sobel in Unalaska. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.